And good afternoon, everybody. Welcome in to Sports Talk. Good evening, I guess. Sun's gone down now for quite a while. I'm Scott Beatty. Welcome in. And Lauren Tate is here as well. We're headed your way, or with you, I should say, all the way until 6 o'clock on this week before Christmas. Hope you're doing well. Maybe you're out and about doing your shopping right now. Lauren Tate, have you gotten everybody checked off your list there?
I've got everybody checked.
Everybody. I can't wait to see what you got me. where's Christmas?
Christmas is going to be in town.
Good.
Our family will be together.
We'll get to some of the headlines here in a moment. Let's tell you what's ahead. Doug Bouchon from Orange and Blue News will join us tomorrow. It's early football signing day. Well, actually, days. It goes through Friday. So we're going to talk with Doug Bouchon about what's coming Illinois' way, what's probably for sure, what might still happen yet, and what might not happen, and see how Illinois may fare. And the Illini are going to have a press conference on Friday to formally talk about all of the commits that they get. Last year, it was all in the past, it's been all one day.
Back in February, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, there still will be a February signing. Yeah,
that's right, but for the teams that signed 25 now, they don't need to, you know, maybe you can go over in February, and maybe somebody won't make their grades or whatever, but I would think that there's all kind of estimates about what the percentage will be of those who sign in December as opposed to what will be left over for February. I'm guessing it's going to be in the neighborhood of 70-80% will be signed in December, because everybody's going to try to sign them. I mean, the only people that don't sign will be the ones that resist that idea.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Lovie Smith has talked since this came out that he wants everybody he can to sign December, and why wouldn't you as a coach?
He's got roughly 15 right now, depending on how you count them. But I would think he'd have another 5 or 6 at least tomorrow, I mean, during this coming week.
And then later in the hour, I'll talk with Nate Albaugh, who was the Central head football coach, stepped down from that position, didn't really have a sense of what was next, and has found himself starting a football program at Judah Christian School here in town. We'll talk to him about that as they will launch a football and wrestling program as well in 2018-19. Let's get to some of the headlines, though, for today. Aaron Rodgers is done for the season. The Green Bay Packers have wisely put him on injured reserve. After the Packers lost on Sunday and were eliminated from playoff contention, Rodgers missed 7 games with a broken right collarbone that he suffered back on in October. Now that the Packers are out of playoff contention, there's no need to risk anything more with Aaron Rodgers. Illinois basketball has made an offer for a 2019 wing player in Lester Quinones. I'll go with that. 6'5", 200 pounds, plays at St. Benedict's Prep in Newark, New Jersey. 3-star prospect for Rivals. Basketball tonight, Ohio State hosting the Citadel. Penn State hosts Binghamton. Northwestern has Lewis. Iowa has Southern Utah. And Indiana yesterday, of course, tried to pick up an easy home win. It wasn't easy. They lost to
Fort
Wayne.
When you get outscored 51-12 from the three-point line, it's hard to win.
It's a great equalizer.
Oh, man. Are you kidding me? They got hot in that second half, did Fort Wayne, and they just buried them with threes.
You know, I always wonder, is it really on the defense when you get outshot? Because there's almost always somebody that can be open from the three-point line. And once that happens, once those shots start falling.
And if you got 3 or 4 guys that can shoot it out there, it's just impossible to guard it. I mean, you can guard one guy. But if you have any kind of penetration ability at all, you can penetrate and kick, and that's what you see. That's what New Mexico State did against Illinois.
Well, and we can talk about that game here in a moment, but the reality is if you leave guys unguarded, they're going to make them at a much higher rate. There's the obvious statement of the day. That doesn't take a very smart person to tell you that. But even with some defensive pressure, teams can get hot. And it's hard to know if you're making the outside shot, it's almost hard to stop.
You know that a 40% shooting is pretty good from the three-point line. That's real good. But a lot of teams do it. Not every game, but in a lot of games. If you shoot 40%, it's the same as 60% from inside the arc. Now, 60% shooting is really, really good. So 40% shooting is good because you get that extra point.
That's why who's the head coach that was here from Marshall was talking about that he loved threes, because you get 1.3 points per attempt is the average three
pointer. Spent his whole life trying to get the ball in the post and found out that's the worst shot in basketball.
It's a very low percentage shot in terms of points per attempt. Obviously, if you're standing 2 feet from the basket and you're wide open, it's a great shot. But that's usually, guarded. So those shots that work from down there are layups, not post shots. That being said, Laron Black's having a good time down there right now.
Yeah, Laron Black has got a nice fadeaway shot that he can get off down there, a nice jump shot. But they still only add up to 2 points. So if you shoot 40%, which is okay, if you hit 4 out of 10 down there, if you hit 4 out of 10 from the arc, that's a lot more points.
Exactly. Then yeah, 12 to 8. Yeah, or if you may even make half of them from inside the arc, you still made more points. And the other high percentage or high value shot is a free throw.
The problem with the 3-point shot is this. Number one, it's not consistent. You won't shoot the same every game. If you are a 38% shoot team, let's say, on the season, you'll have some games where you hit 50% and some games where you hit 30%. When you hit 30%, that's not going to work out so well for you. So consistency is a real problem. The other problem is when you have a lead late, the 3-point shot isn't the same because teams become hesitant and don't want to shoot the 3-pointer when they have a small lead.
Exactly.
They want to eat a little clock and work the ball in. Well, you know, that's okay, but the other team's shooting threes. When you're behind, you're shooting threes.
Mm-hmm.
Relentlessly.
And that's why the deficit can go away so quickly.
Right. That's why you see so many swings, late swings. One team's trying to protect, the other team's trying to score threes.
Wonder what would happen if coaches start saying, we have a lead, we're going to play like we don't.
You can't do that. I knew a coach once upon a time told me that this year, after all those close games we lost last year, we're going to play every game just as though we're behind. And you get the guys in the huddle and you tell them they're behind and they look at the scoreboard and think, no, we're not, coach. We're ahead. We got to hold the ball. No, it's psychological.
Exactly.
You just can't get players to play the same when they're behind as when they're ahead. You can't do it. You can talk about it. Somebody will call up and say, well, you know, what's the matter? Why don't you just do that? Well, you can't. It's just psychologically, players know what the score is.
Same reason why players play down against weaker opponents sometimes and will play up against better opponents.
And why do football teams go 3 and out when they have the lead at the end of a game? Because they're afraid to do anything. They're afraid to pass the ball. The other team knows they're afraid to pass, so they put everybody up and they stop you three plays and you're out and you got to punt. The other team gets the ball back. What are they going to do? They're
going
to throw it. They're going to do whatever they have to do to get the ball down there. I mean, it's all psychological. And it goes on so – it's been all my life I've seen this, and it's never going to change.
Some other news today. Lane Kiffin reportedly has a 6-year extension to coach at Florida Atlantic. That's good through 2027. Had a 10-3 record going – has a 10-3 record going into tonight's Boca Raton Bowl. Some baseball news. Adrian Gonzalez has been released by the Atlanta Braves. He is a free agent. Texas Rangers left-hander Martin Perez broke his non-pitching elbow in a mishap with a bull. He's likely to miss the start of the season. Just wouldn't really
Is Adrian Gonzalez done? Or does he have another good year of hitting left?
I think.
Because I've seen that guy hit.
I think he could be picked up by somebody and be a backup or off-the-bench kind of guy.
He's a first baseman, right?
Yeah, and the Braves are set there with Freddie Freeman, so that's part of the reason I think they let him go. Evanston, Northwestern quarterback Clayton Thorson plans to return for his senior season. I don't quite get why he made an announcement that he was coming back. I don't know what other options were out there for Clayton Thorson. No disrespect to him.
Could he have been a low draft pick, maybe 6th, 7th round?
Possibly. 356-9397 is the number to call if you want to weigh in on anything. Bill is in Rantoul. Hi, Bill.
How you doing, gentlemen? I think the post game is kind of disappearing for a couple reasons. There's just not that many skilled post players that seems like it used to be. Everybody that's defending is athletic and long arms and the whole thing. But if you're posting up, you're not allowed to, you know, make space and clear out and, you know, muscle your way in like you used to be able to.
You know, let me ask you, are you sure about that? I watched Indiana play Notre Dame, and they threw that ball to Morgan, and he simply butted and displaced the defender repeatedly and scored. He scored 36 points in that game that way. And I know you're right in terms of what they're trying to do, but I still see some of that in games where centers just butt their way backwards.
Yeah, maybe in certain games, but it seems to me the trend is they don't allow them to do what they used to be. But if you take the ball to the hole, if you got a guy who can beat the guy off the dribble, he's either probably going to make the shot or he's going to get fouled.
Mm-hmm.
And being at the line, you see a lot of wins. There's a big discrepancy at the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can take the ball to the hole, you're probably your percentage goes up pretty high because you either make the close-in shot or you're going to get called for the foul. So I think that's a couple reasons. Maybe you don't see the post game like it used to be. But sometimes I just think they make so many changes every year, it seems like. I didn't think the game was too physical myself. I mean, I did, of course, when Scott May was knocking James Augustine around. I thought it was way too physical. But on the whole, I'm not there to watch a badminton game. I'm there to watch, big, strong athletes go at it. So,
I agree. I think by and large, there are just too many stoppages of play, and it
takes real judgment as an official, doesn't it?
I'm not saying their job is easy. I'm not saying I could do better. I'm just saying, sitting and watching the basketball game, it seems very easy to get contact drawn. And it seems, from what I hear, players who always will say, when I played, that wasn't a foul. When I played, that wasn't a foul. You hear commentators say that all the time. And it seems to be, I don't want to say the game's softer, because I certainly would just get thrown around if I was out there. But I think a guy like, that's one of the reasons Mark Smith could be so successful here at Illinois, because he's strong, he can draw contact, he can finish plays. He's got a lot of and-one opportunities coming as he develops.
Yeah, the only thing I worry about Mark Smith is I don't see him having great jumping ability or the ability to hang in the air the way Lofton did against Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Lofton would drive and hang and draw fouls and shoot layups. Do you know that New Mexico State made 17 dunks and layups on Illinois? 17 inside. And also, their threes were open because they were penetrating and kicking back. So they were open both ways. And yet they only shot 49% from the field. They weren't red hot.
No.
They just made a lot of layups, and they made enough threes to win the game.
And Illinois made enough mistakes at the end, too.
Well, of course. I mean, all those things play in. I'm just talking about the fact that Illinois has got a problem because they can't protect the basket. When guys drive, you don't see anybody there to block the shot. And the opposite is true on the other end frequently so far, as we've seen this season.
Still to come here, we will talk with Doug Bouchon from Orange and Blue News. He will talk to us about what's ahead for Illinois signing days tomorrow for football. Nate Allball later in the hour. We'll see if we can squeeze more of your calls and thoughts into this as well. Tuesday Sports Talk here on DWS.
Hi, it's Dave Gentry. Join us on the DWS Morning Show for Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin. That's Wednesday morning on DWS.
It's 5:26 Sports Talk here on Tuesday. Football signing day tomorrow, Thursday and Friday for Illinois football and the rest of Division One as well. Doug Bouchon has a beat on all that's going on recruiting-wise and joins us now on the phone. You can read his work at orangeandbluenews.com. Doug, this is it. This is everything you've worked for is coming tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it kind of snuck up on us with the early signing period this year, December 20th through 22nd. Usually it's been, the first week of February, and you got some time over the holidays and over the winter to get ready. But, tomorrow they start faxing in their national letters of intent, and we'll see how it goes. They got 15 commitments, kids getting ready to sign and send in their commitments, and that's going to be developing here over the next 3 days.
They still fax. They all that we have, here we are, 2017, and they still fax.
Some of them still fax, yeah, and some of them just send it by email, which you can now. Electronic versions of the letter of intent are allowed. You can sign it and scan it and send it in by email. But, yeah, some of them still fax them from their schools.
Well, there's a couple of big names, and one's Calvin Avery, MJ Rivers, and then there's the question mark is Veritas Brown, who was committed at Florida State, backed out, and he may be coming to Illinois as well. Let's start there. What's the latest on his situation?
Still here in Illinois, but he visited Missouri. I think it was last weekend or sometime soon, or sometime not too long ago. And, you know, I think Missouri did a good job, and they made it kind of interesting here at the end. But I still think it's going to be Illinois on Friday. And, you know, he's a big addition to the class. You know, Levy Smith got in real early with Virtus Brown. They offered him at a camp up in Chicago when they saw him up there at a satellite camp. Then he transferred from Chicago Mount Carmel to Florida, to IMG Academy, which is one of the best prep schools in the country, and kind of became a national recruit and then committed to Florida State. But, you know, they had the coaching change in Tallahassee, and Virtus opened things back up, and I think Illinois is right there at the end, and I think they're going to land him on Friday.
He is a big offensive lineman, almost 300 pounds. What do you think, if he does commit, what do you think Lovie sold him on?
It's just the relationship that he had early on with Levy Smith, that personal relationship. It was a really strong bond there. His family really likes Levy Smith. It's home to him. You know, he's been there for a visit several times. Just feels comfortable with the staff, comfortable with the current players and the program, and you know, selling him on playing close to home. I think they did a really good job in the recruitment. They got in really early, and that bond that he has with Levy is really the key to the whole thing.
Before we get off Virtus Brown, what position do you think he's going to play, center or defensive line?
Yeah, I think he'll probably start him out on the offensive line at center. But, you know, it could go either way. When they first started recruiting him, he was a D-tackle at Chicago Mount Carmel. Real athletic kid. He could definitely play defense and make an impact there, too. But, he played offensive center all year at IMG Academy, and that's where he's ranked on our board as a center. And I think they think that he can come in and start at center next year. So I think that's probably where he'll start out.
What are the last-minute developments that you see happening right now with just hours before midnight, after which players can start signing?
You know, not a lot of drama here from the Illinois side. I think there were some kids that visited that they thought maybe they could take here and sign in the next couple of days that kind of dropped off the board, and that either didn't land them or decided not to take them. But as far as the Illinois commits, I think they expect to sign, if not all of them, the majority of them tomorrow or on Thursday. So, you know, not a whole lot of drama as far as that goes. Now, there's still some guys at the top of their board that they're really pushing hard for. Dallas Craddy from St. Louis, the safety, is a guy that they really want. Right now, Dallas is saying he's going to sign in February, but of course they would love to get him now and sign him in the next couple of days. And he's looking at Indiana. He's looking at Iowa. Those are his top three, along with Illinois. So that's really a kid to watch here in the next couple of days.
So you think they'll sign another 8 or 10, 6, 8, 10, something like that, in addition to the 15 they've already committed?
Well, the slots are there. They got 9 available scholarships, you know. The wide receiver that they got from Appalachian State, the fifth-year transfer, he counts towards the 25, which is the NCAA maximum that you can sign in the class. So there's 16 right now and 9 available scholarships. And, you know, they could fill all of them between now and February 7th, which is the next signing day. You know, they probably want to. They're not going to get the 85 scholarship players probably either way, but I think they probably could pick up 9 more kids and sign them.
Will they go towards the JUCO ranks at all?
Yeah, they look at it a little bit. They dabble in it, I think. They look for kids that could help them. You know, they brought a kid, Karen Adams. He's a JUCO from College of San Francisco. His dad played in the NFL. He knows Lovie Smith. They brought him in for an official visit. He's a pretty decent cornerback, pretty good speed. But at the end of the day, I don't think he's coming to Illinois. I think it's going to be Arizona State, maybe Oregon for him. So, you know, they look at kids that maybe can come in and help them. But this is not like Tim Beckman's group where they brought in a whole bunch of JUCO kids.
MJ Rivers, the highly touted quarterback out of Texas, has been tweeting today that he's excited for tomorrow. He can't wait. He has put orange and blue colors in his tweet. His commitment there is to be believed, because there were some folks that were concerned that he was getting too good and would get picked up by somebody else. But do you think he stays true to Illinois?
Oh, yeah, he's ready to sign. He just visited, took his official. He's locked into Illinois. He's going to send in a letter of intent tomorrow. And, you know, he's excited, and I think fans should be pretty excited about Rivers, too. He's a big kid, 6'4", about 220 pounds, real physical runner. You know, he's not a burner that you run plays for, but he can run the ball and throw the ball. Big pocket presence. You know, I want to see him throw in person in camp before we really start touting him for superstar status. I don't know about his arm strength yet, but he's got the tools, big kid, and I think Illinois really likes him, and they're going to sign him tomorrow.
Illinois played 22 freshmen this year. What do you think it'll be like next year? How many freshmen do you think will play?
Well, not 22, but they're still going to play some freshmen. You know, they had the 10 scholarship players transfer out of the program. You know, I think that, and the defense was hit pretty hard with the transfers, linebacker and in the secondary, Trey Watson and Patrick Nelson leaving. But, you know, they're still going to be young. They're still going to have freshmen making a contribution, being in the two deep. I think Calvin Avery, the D-tackle out of Texas, has a good chance to start at D-tackle, you know, next to Jamal Milan. He'll be fighting Tamir Oliver for that starting spot. Then several other kids will be, you know, competing to be in the two deep on the offensive line, linebacker, and wide receiver, just a lot of positions.
We're talking with Doug Bouchon. You can follow him on Twitter at Illinois Rivals if you want to know what's going to happen and what the latest buzz is around Illinois football recruiting and basketball for that matter. Head to orangeandbluenews.com. All right, guys, I wanted to throw this out to you because today Ohio State reported, self-reported a violation to the NCAA involving a high school football player, Micah Parsons, ranked as seventh best overall prospect by ESPN and fourth overall by 24/7, first reported by their student newspaper out there, The Lantern. And according to Ohio State's report, the recruit's parents asked to check out a college game day set while it was at OSU with OSU assistant Ed Terwilliger. They brought him up to the ESPN set with Kirk Herbstreit, Eddie George, who was a celebrity guest picker, and Lee Corso. Parsons took photos with the cast during a commercial break before leaving the set to resume his tour. That's a violation because, according to this article here on Deadspin, Parsons can hang out with former players like Herbstreit, but because he met with Herbstreit and George while they were working as members of the media, it was a violation. And it is possible that would cost them a recruit, and Terwilliger is also suspended for a game, and they have to keep all the recruits away from game day. Doug, you follow a lot of recruiting. Is that an arcane law there that they have to follow, or was that just something dumb they did?
You know, I think it was just something dumb that they did, but you know, I think the problem there probably is not so much that they're in the media and working in the media. It's that both Herbstreit and Eddie George are, you know, Ohio State graduates. So, you know, you got potential boosters working in the media that could possibly influence a recruit. But, you know, it's a little nitpicky, and the NCAA is so inconsistent with their rules that it's hard to track, you know, what they're going to enforce and what they're not going to enforce. And sometimes you get hit with a little thing like that. And in this case, it's going to cost them, you know, one of the top recruits in the country. But you know, it's not like Ohio State's hurting for talent. You know, they'll probably lose the sixth-ranked kid and get the eighth-ranked kid. But just seems a little silly to me and kind of inconsistent on the part of the NCAA.
The bylaw says members of the media may not be present during an institution's recruiting contact with a prospect, and a prospect may not participate in team activities that would make the public or media aware of the prospect's visit to the institution. That part of it I don't understand at all. A prospect may not participate in team activities that would make the public or media aware of the prospect's visit to the institution. We're aware all the time when prospects are here having visits.
We're there, but we're not, yes. When they're taking an official visit, they're not allowed to have any contact with the media, is the deal. And, you know, if they're on campus during an unofficial visit, we can talk to them, but they can't have like a showcase during an official visit where media are present and they film the kid and talk to him. That's a no-go. It always has been.
Well, there's a lot of weird rules with the NCAA, and I guess Ohio State should have just known better, especially somebody like Ed Terwilliger. But it also seems just confusing and sometimes needless.
Yep. I said, they're inconsistent, I think, with the rules. Sometimes you don't know which ones they're going to enforce. Which ones they aren't. And there's a lot of gray area, and I think most of the programs cross the gray area quite a bit. You just never know which way the NCAA is going
to
go.
Best way that could be handled, in my opinion, is just say, sorry, we didn't mean to do it. We made a mistake, some kind of a minor. You don't prevent the kid from going to school there, but they're doing that.
Right.
All right, Doug.
Yeah,
so
that would require a little common sense. You know,
that's right.
Common sense doesn't always come into play. So.
All right, Doug, so majority of these guys are going to be signing tomorrow, or how many are we going to wait and are going to be waiting till Friday?
Yeah, I think most of them are going to sign tomorrow. You know, But you know, they're going to be there in the war room the next 3 days. Some of them might wait a little bit, but I think the majority of them we're going to get them tomorrow.
All right. Hey, Doug, we appreciate you checking in. I know you'll be on top of all this as it develops.
Yep, and we'll be up in Chicago for Virtus Brown's announcement on Friday. So,
thanks, Doug.
Yeah, appreciate it, Doug.
All right.
And you can check out more of that again at orangeandbluenews.com, where you can find Doug's coverage. Lauren and I are back with more still to come, conversation with Nate Albaugh. Sports Talk on this Tuesday. Scott and Lauren with you. Hope you're having a good pre-Christmas week. Maybe you're out getting some last-minute presents right now. Lauren, do you have a go-to for those gifts? Do you carefully select your gifts for every person you're giving to?
Yes.
Okay. You give thoughtful gifts.
I let them pick them out. I buy them. I put them in a box, and then I surprise them at Christmas. They all know what they're getting, but they all act like they're surprised. I learned a long time ago not to buy things for women and expect them to like it. So I take them out. They pick out what they want. I say, okay. I take it home, send it to them, and then at Christmas we're all surprised. I know what I'm getting, too.
Good. Something you wanted?
Yes. Good. I picked it out.
Good. Then I'll just return my gift that I had for you.
I got a ukulele once for Christmas.
And you wanted it?
No, sir. And I took it back, and it was, I don't remember the purchase price, but the guy had the same ukulele that was purchased, and it was $100 less when I took it back.
So you made some money.
In other words,
he made the money.
He made $100 on it because I didn't have any business. What am I going to do with the ukulele?
Well, you could learn it and
play
it.
Yeah, do you know how hard it is to play a ukulele?
I can guess.
I can play the guitar, but I can't play a ukulele. That's murder.
You had a bit of a somber day today, attending.
I did.
And our condolences out to the Beach family.
Yep.
On the death of Shirley Beach. And by all accounts, just a wonderful person.
She really was. She married Ted when they were in, and you can imagine this, in a basketball season. They had a game in a late December game. They got married the next day. They maybe had another day, and then they had a game the following day.
Sounds like he was living the best of both worlds.
He was married, right. He was married right between two Illinois games, and he was on a Final Four team in 51 when he was a senior at the University of Illinois. That was the team with Don Sunderlage and all those great sophomores, Peterson and Falmer and Bemoris and Bredar. And, of course, Rod Fletcher was the other forward. He was the junior. He was the only junior that was playing a lot.
Sounds like Ted really got good in his upperclassman years.
Well, Ted was great as a high school senior. And then in those days, it was hard to break in as a sophomore. You had to sit out your freshman year. And Illinois was, like, really, really good. I mean, in 1949, they went to the Final Four. In 1951, they went to the Final Four. In 1952, they went to the Final Four. How about that? Harry Combs' first 5 years, he went to the Final Four three times. 49 was with Edelman, whose wife, Teddy, just died this week, this past week. So, you know, you had Edelman's team and that great ball club with Erickson and Osterkorn and those guys in 49, and then you had the great group in 51 and 52. Then Red Kerr became eligible in 52, and he joined all those sophomores that I mentioned before, Peterson and Bemoris and Bredar and Falmer, and they went right back to the Final Four. Illinois was a dominant powerhouse basketball team nationally and kept losing 2-point games to St. John 1 year, 2-point games in 51 to Kentucky. Sunderlage had the last shot in that game and missed a driving shot to tie it. I mean, that's how close they were to get to the championship game. Lost to Kentucky in the semis.
Sounds like Illinois basketball right now, although the stakes aren't quite as high. But keep losing all these close ones.
It's a little different when you're losing in the Final Four because, you know, that's really high-level basketball.
Oh, I understand. Well, our condolences to Ted and his entire family. We've had Becky Beach on.
Yeah, Becky, before. Great golfer.
Yeah, she's over at Stone Creek now. So
Andy Beach came back from Texas and made a great speech for his mother. And it was just a terrific and a great turnout. And you know, it's just she was 88 and had a great life.
Well, we had a chance to catch up with Nate Albaugh. He was the Central football coach until this past year. He stepped down from that position, didn't really have a next step firmly in place, and lo and behold, he is now going to be the head coach at Judah Christian School to launch a new program. I had a chance to catch up with Nate a little bit earlier today. Here's our conversation. Well, Nate, thanks for joining us here on Sports Talk. Last time we talked, you were the head football coach at Central High School. Now you're going to be the head football coach at Judah Christian School. Congratulations. Is this something that you ever thought would happen?
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. It is not something I saw or even had on my radar as I got out at Central. It was the last thing from my mind. So the last month has been a whirlwind of action and activity and has culminated with this, which is humbling mostly and then very exciting.
You get to build a program from the scratch. Is that exciting to you? Some people like to inherit what they get and kind of build on what's there. Other people like the idea of putting all the foundation together themselves.
Yeah, well, there's exciting parts to it, you know, that you get to establish what will be the way of life around your program. So you get to establish all that. So that's all great, but there's also bad sides to it that, of course, you won't have a single player who has any experience. So there are positives and negatives. And, of course, I think you just try to enjoy each program for what it has or doesn't have. And you know, they're all just their own unique animals. So this is going to be unique, starting from ground zero. So I'm just going to try to enjoy the parts that are worth enjoying.
You're also going to start a wrestling program. So how does that work with the inevitable overlap that there is between the end of football and the beginning of wrestling season and just trying to start two programs at the same time?
Yeah, well, there's only overlap if you're good at football, right? So if you can keep winning, there's overlap. And if you have that overlap, then great. So there's a lot of football wrestling coaches out there. Wrestling, to me, on all this, I thought was necessary. I feel like you can't really have a football program or without a wrestling program. If you want to attract students to your school or attract students to stick around at your school at JCS, if they're an athlete or a football player, a lot of those guys, those wrestlers are football wrestler type. You know, I'm an old wrestler, and we're a tight fraternity, and we all kind of stick together, and you almost can't have one without the other. So it was a necessary. The great thing about wrestling is that there's no pressure to build a championship team right away. You know, you're not under pressure to win matches. It's an opportunity. You have that as an opportunity for your students and for your athletes, and I'm excited to be a part of that because I have a long wrestling background.
Nate Albaugh is with us here on Sports Talk. He is the new head coach of football at Judah Christian School, as well as wrestling, and those programs will launch in the next school year. What enticed you to Judah?
Well, I have a daughter at Judah, and my son was actually at Judah as well a few years ago, and I ended up putting him in the public schools because I knew he was going to be a football and wrestler, and junior high was coming around, and I wanted him there. And so when I got out at Central, my wife and I made the decision that we were looking for somewhere else to send my children to high school, and that was really the goal. I had to put my coaching career on hold for the sake of getting my family to where I wanted them to be. And as soon as I got out and I started looking at where else could I coach, and I was actually very anxious to be someone's assistant for a while, with everything that just the way life has gone in my own worldview and my own being more and more aware politically over the last couple years, it has become very obvious to my wife and I that we really wanted our kids at a Christian school, and football and wrestling just wasn't an option at Judah, and so it just didn't feel like an option for my family, and I just thought, I'm just going to reach out and just ask them the question: Have you ever considered it? What would it take, and is there any way I could help?
Be careful when you ask those questions, right?
That one small question grew into what it is now.
Nate, how do you start a football program? And this is a day and age when I don't know that it's necessarily happening here in Champaign, Urbana, or in Champaign County even, but just generally, some schools are getting away from football. There's the concern about injuries. There's just less people participating in it. So what are the challenges of starting a football program from scratch?
Yeah, well,
at a private school.
Sure. Well, numbers are always going to be a concern. They're a concern for everyone. But I think that we're going to be open and flexible. If I've told people that if next fall we played intramural 4-on-4 against each other, we would do it on a Friday night under the lights, and it would be a great community event for us. The reality is that in our country, every fall, we get mesmerized by this sport. And there's no other sport that can bring an entire school or a community together like football in our country. It's special, it's unique, and it adds so much to your culture to have it. So we want to have it. So what that's going to look like is yet to be seen. Of course, we would love to play 11-man football, but we really have our eye right now as well on 8-man football. 8-man football is up and coming in Illinois, and we just want to be open-minded and excited about just bringing the sport to our school. And whatever that looks like for our school, we're not going to force anything. Again, this decision for myself was way more so about getting my kids at Judah and being able to have a role in the school where I was contributing to their culture. That's what I'm most excited about. So football has kind of been a second or third thought to all, this whole process. And so I kind of am done pursuing my own football career and chasing wins. I just want to do something that's good for the school, and we're going to bring football in some way, shape, or form.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned wins, because obviously when you start a program, they might be hard to come by in the first thing, but are there goals or hopes or expectations that you've had discussions with about being a winning football team on the field?
No, that is not a conversation that we've had at all. I think the last time it came up is when Mr. Chitty, the superintendent, kind of asked, what does it take to start a football program? And I said, well, there's two things to look at. One route is, what does it take to start? The other route is, what does it take to win? Those might be two different things, and the timeline might be different. But if you want to just play, you can play. Mm-hmm. You want to have good leadership in place. And of course, I feel like we could quickly, there's a handful of pretty good athletes over at Judah having a successful basketball season right now. And you could put together a team that, given the right schedule, could compete. But again, we don't want to force that. And I think winning hasn't really come up. But of course, we want to pursue excellence in everything we do. If we decide to compete and go for 11-man, we're going to try to be as competitive as we can right away. And of course, you're just trying to win one game at a time.
Well, Nate, obviously Judah sees you as a dynamic leader as well. Congratulations on the new opportunity. Thanks for spending some time with us, and we're looking forward to circling back with you as things get launched.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate Nate's time, and there's more with him at our website, wdws.com. We had an extended conversation there. Lauren and I are back to wrap it up after this.
Hi again, everyone. This is Jim Turpin. Join me for Penny for Your Thoughts on Wednesday. We'll have an open line the first hour, then we'll have a conversation with Jim Dye from the News Gazette.
Tomorrow, Lauren, I understand you've got a, or is it coming up for next week, a podcast about the best of 2017?
That's tomorrow.
Any teases, any... I have an idea what the best of 2017 was.
Yeah, but you don't know what the 10th one is. The top 10, okay? You know what the 10th one is?
No.
It's a surprise. The 10th biggest event of the 2017 season is Illinois beating Missouri in St. Louis Saturday night.
You think it's going to happen?
Well, do I have to answer that? But it sounds like I had fun saying it anyway.
Yeah, that would be nice. I have lost
Wouldn't
the confidence.
Wouldn't that be one of the top 10?
Oh, for sure.
We'll see.
But I've lost confidence to believe that's going to happen.
Well.
Based on this performance.
They don't have Porter, remember.
They don't have
Porter.
They don't
have Michael Porter, and Illinois will be fired up for that, and Illinois will be an underdog. I understand that.
But the crowd will be huge.
But Missouri, I don't know. They're playing tonight, by the way. They're playing Stephen F. Austin. Do you know that?
Interesting.
Yeah. You know who coached Stephen F. Austin once?
I think Brad Underwood was there for a time. May have taken him to the
three
tournament.
3 great years. This is just 2 years later. I don't know how good they are right now, but obviously they're not as good as when Underwood was there. But it'll be interesting to see how Missouri performs in that game.
Yeah. This headline as well, Jerry Kill is not going to be back as Rutgers offensive coordinator due to his health issues. There was speculation that may in fact be the case. He just keeps running into all this stuff that he's had with the seizures and epilepsy and all that. So best to Jerry Kill.
Yeah, absolutely. What a great coach.
Yeah, so that is too bad. All right, thanks to Nate Albaugh for joining us. Again, that conversation at our website, wdws.com. Thanks to Doug Bouchon from Orange and Blue News. If you missed that, this whole show will be a podcast at our website. You can also find us on iTunes, and do us a favor, if you are listening to us on iTunes, go ahead and give us a rating. Lets us know that you like it. That helps boost the podcast. Lauren, look forward to your podcast tomorrow, and we'll talk to you Saturday for the Border Report.
I'm heading to Paxton to see Monticello play right
all
now.
Right. Go Sages. And go Paxton, because I'm neutral, but I know you're a Sage.
PBL.
Thanks so much to Blake Landa behind the scenes. This is News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station. Time at the tone is 6 o'clock. World News Roundup is next. Good night.